Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. This is our second ever episode that we're filming not in Vietnam. We're recording today's podcast here in Bangkok, Thailand. And we're here in Bangkok today because we have two guests. We have one of two here on the podcast episode today. His name's Amar Lavani, Executive Chairman of Standard International. And for those of you that don't know Standard International, I'll let Amar kind of explain himself. But Amar, before we get into that, we're going to start with some rapid-fire questions to get us warmed up a little bit here and to get to know you a bit better. Yeah. There's no wrong answer here, and keep it as nice and tidy as possible.
Okay.
So first question for you is, what brought you to Asia?
About 25 years ago, I came to Asia when I worked for Starwood Capital Group. Mm. And the financial crisis that happened here in Thailand in 1998-99, I came over with that company. We were looking at distressed investments.
Okay.
And I actually got left here for about 10 weeks.
Okay.
Ended up living in the region and living in Thailand for 2 years.
Second question, describe the Standard brand in three words.
Bold, irreverent, cultural.
What separates Standard from its competitors?
It's who we hire. The biggest thing for me and the pride I take and the thanks I get from our team is we let people be themselves. And if we let people be themselves, they bring out their creativity, which adds to what we are as a brand. And of course, beyond that, culture, style, nightlife, design, fashion, all the pillars of things that we love, we infuse those things into our hotels.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned running a hotel brand?
Kind of a common saying, but it is all about the people. It's all about who you hire. It's how you treat them. We can build great buildings. We can have great design. But if we don't have the people to bring it to life, we're nothing.
What motivates you?
I love creating stuff. I love creating things that people can enjoy.
What do you do to relax?
I love to eat. I love to drink. I love to travel. I love to spend time with my wife, my kids, and my dog.
What do you splurge on?
I splurge on music. I love going to concerts.
On a Sunday at 10 a.m., where would you be and what would you be doing?
At home in Tribeca in the neighborhood, probably walking my dog by the water.
And last question, if I were to go on to ChatGPT and ask who is Amar, what would it say?
Someone who's passionate about life, who loves to create things, who loves learning new things, who loves to connect with people, and someone who loves life.
Okay, perfect. I love that kind of take on life that you have, Amar, and it's obvious that it bleeds into the brands that you run, including Standard. So I'm a big fan. Actually, I used to work in the OTA industry 12, 13 years ago, something like that. And one of the first brands I admired was Standard.
Thank you.
And so it's incredible that we're just sitting here today and I'm having the chance to interview you. So just want to give a quick thanks for your time. Before we dive into any specifics about the industry and what you do at Standard, for our Vietnamese audience in particular, who's watching and may not know anything about Standard and what you guys do, give us a quick rundown of what is Standard, what do you do, and what do you hope to accomplish?
I'll give you a little history of Standard because I think that helps inform. Standard was started, the first hotel opened in 1998 on the Sunset Strip in California, in LA. It was started by a guy named Andre Balazs, who is a founder of what I would call this, what they call now the lifestyle hotel movement or boutique hotels. I would say Ian Schrager and Andre were the first people to think about hotels in a different way. Why does it have to be about consistency and cookie cutter? And you think back in the 70s, 80s, 60s, 70s, 80s, when international brands started to go around the world, the Hiltons and the Sheratons, the goal was for consistency of experience. There was nothing special, so to speak. And it was, in fact, the least special it was, the more people felt comfortable traveling to another city. So whether you were in Istanbul or Bangkok, the Hilton looked approximately the same. Right. And that was a benefit. So these two gentlemen in particular came out and said, well, why can't hotels be more interesting? Why can't there be great design? Why can't there be great bars, restaurants, nightclubs? And so Standard was founded with that philosophy in mind. Standard logo is upside down. Mm. Upside down for a reason, meaning we think differently, we turn hospitality on its head.
Okay.
The Standard in Hollywood that opened at that time was an old retirement apartment building that was then infused with the culture and the nightlife and the style that Andre brought. So Standard grew up starting with Hollywood, then downtown LA, then Miami, and then New York. The flagship hotel called the Standard Highline was opened when I joined the company around 2008 or 2009. And I worked with Andre, learned a lot from him. I ended up leaving for a bit to do my own things, open some restaurants. And he came back to me and said, would you like to come back on board and run the company? He was ready to step back from his position. I said, well, I would love to, because I thought Standard was the most underutilized brand in the hotel business. But I said, it needs to be different. I'll run the company, but I need to control the company. not out of ego, but more to put my mark on it, to really take Standard where I thought it could go. And so I raised some money and ended up buying Andre down and ended up buying Andre out of the company. And the capital we raised was from Asia, in fact, from Thailand. And so we now, when I started with the company, we had four hotels. Now, flash forward roughly 10 years since I took it over, we have about 20 hotels open.
Amazing.
And about, we're on our path to about 50 in total over the next 5 years.
Did you ever imagine it to hit 50 when you first started?
I did. I actually did. Because one of my prior responsibilities, I was responsible for the global development for W Hotels. And when I started with them, we were about 8 hotels, and I was responsible for taking that brand around the world. And I thought Standard had a really strong DNA, a really strong appeal, and I thought we had the ability to do something similar in our own unique way.
Oh, well, I have a million questions for you, Amar, about that journey. We're here in Asia, and it's a very different experience from the likes of New York and the U.S., where the Standard was born. And Standard now has been in Asia for 5+ years, it sounds like. Could we have the restaurants, the bars, back in the 80s and 90s in a hotel? We had the Hiltons of the world. Now we're seeing the Standards of the world emerge, these lifestyle brands. Does Asia have an adequate number of these lifestyle brands, per se? Because when we're here in Vietnam, and a lot of our audience will know, they take their dollars to the big box name brands, right? We go to the Marriott's, the Hyatt, we go, and the likes, and they're very used to those. But there is no lifestyle brands in particular in Vietnam. And you could say that in parts of Asia, if not all of it, actually. So what's your comment about that? Where do you see Standard pioneering that particular category of hotels in Asia?
Two reasons that I love what I do and that I want to expand the Standard brand. The first one goes to exactly what you're saying, which is I go to cities often, places that I love, places like Mexico City or to Lisbon. I have not been to Ho Chi Minh City, but I understand I will love that city when I go, from what I know about it. And when I go to those cities, I say to myself, I wish there were a Standard here. Not from a business standpoint, but from a consumer standpoint. So there's a lot more places we can go and will go for that exact reason. Now, to the comment about a place like Ho Chi Minh or Lisbon, like I mentioned, or Mexico City, they're dominated by the big box, the traditional hotels. That, to me, is not because the customer demand is not there. It's because the supply side is not there. What I mean by that is hotels are typically developed by real estate developers. Real estate developers tend to be local. They tend to be conservative. They tend to be risk-averse and return-oriented. So it's not for lack of demand in those cities. The young people are there. The restaurants are there. The nightlife is there. But hotels are very capital-intensive. And we're dependent upon the real estate developer community, who tends to have a more conservative view than do the consumers themselves.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because offline during our lunch just before this, you mentioned some markets, like a Korea, for example, where there's huge demand. In fact, Korea, the market, represents the majority of travelers coming here now, if I understand correctly.
Not the majority, but the highest percentage.
20 or 24%,
something like that.
And that's incredible. That tells you a lot about the kinds of consumers that are coming from that market. But then again, it's dominated by the big big box, or even sometimes the homemade brands like the Lotte's. There's a huge market for that group. Don't get us wrong here, but I think the lifestyle approach you mentioned, dominated by real estate developers. What's the disconnect between lifestyle brands and developers? Maybe you can explain that a little
bit. For sure. The first thing to understand is how the industry dynamics work. So hotels fundamentally are in two parts. One is the real estate owners, and one is the operators. So as a consumer, you don't know who the owner of the hotel is. You know what the brand is. So there's a common assumption that we own all our hotels, or that Four Seasons own their hotels, or Marriott, whoever, but the reality is they don't. So in every individual market, a real estate owner owns that hotel, and we operate that hotel. So if you take a market like Korea, which you mentioned, there's clearly the Koreans, not all the Koreans, but there's a segment of Koreans who have fallen in love with our brand. We never expected that 25% of the people in Bangkok staying at Standard would be Korean. So that gives us a very good feeling that the brand would resonate in Korea. And we see what's happened in Korea in media and technology and music, et cetera. We know our brand would work there, but we don't go and buy a site, build a hotel. We're reliant upon partnering with a real estate developer to do that. So it's not that we have to be convinced that the brand will work there. It's that the real estate developer has to be convinced that our brand would work there, and they're willing to take the risk and a structure that works for them and that works for us. So this industry structure drives a lot of where the footprint of these hotels are.
A lot of our audience, you guys listening here today, are real estate developers yourselves. You work or own a company. I know that for a fact. A lot of them have been on my show, actually, as well. Okay. Vietnamese and regional, in fact. In Vietnam, by the way, most of the real estate market is Vietnamese, as you would imagine, mm-hmm. but increasingly large number are from Singapore, from okay. Korea, from Japan, and elsewhere. Let's use this next few minutes to kind of give us your pitch,
sure.
per se. I'd love to hear, especially you mentioned risk averse yep. sometimes, it's capital intensive, they want to have a surefire bet that right. this is going to work. What's your pitch for a lifestyle brand like Standard to be not just culturally relevant and high mm-hmm. impact, but also economically sensible?
The pitch is that it's oftentimes more risky to do something that's not differentiated mm. than to do something that is differentiated.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So as we know from a business strategy perspective, doing something that is different and carves its own niche actually will ultimately have a higher reward than doing something that it looks to be safer.
Right.
Now, from a pure real estate fundamental perspective, the pitch is that we do not build luxury hotels in the traditional sense. If you look around this hotel, you know, I think it's beautiful, but it's based on colors and fabrics and design and aesthetic quality. Mm-hmm. You don't see any marble here. You don't see any crystal here. You don't see expensive materials. You see beautiful quality, but you don't see expensive materials.
Mm.
So we don't spend a lot to build our hotels relative to a luxury brand. The second thing is we really focus on maximizing the revenue per square foot of the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So our rooms are not that big. They're beautifully appointed, but they're not that big.
I think they're quite big, actually.
They're a good size, not if you compare to the Aman here or the Four
right.
Seasons.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But what you do see is that we maximize the revenue potential within the rest of the hotel. So here between whether it's Mott 32 or OHO or the parlor, every square foot is used for something. In Asia, you tend to have hotels with big lobbies and they're grand statements to the developer who made it or the architect yeah. who designed it. We're focused from the inside out. So we focus on the guest and the consumer. And so the combination of not using expensive materials,
yeah.
not building too much and building efficient buildings, and the revenue per square foot that we generate will generate a higher return to the real estate developers that partner with us.
Mm.
And that I don't think is totally understood.
Let's talk about the F&B side of things,
yeah.
Food and beverage, for those of you that don't know the term. We talk a lot about how in emerging Asian cities that consumers want new experiences, new cuisines, and they're willing to go out and search for them. They want destinations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a hotel in the traditional sense is not really a destination. It's a place where you have travelers from overseas,
yeah.
maybe from within the same country coming to stay, but they usually go out
mm-hmm.
for experiences. May they be landmarks, food, shopping, whatever it might be. Here, though, and an increasing number, it's a discussion point across the whole hospitality industry. How do we capture more revenue per guest
mm-hmm.
in a way, and F&B has to be that. And you mentioned, I believe offline, it was something like 75% of F&B revenue for
yeah.
Standard, at least at this property, is F&B. Cool. Talk about that a little bit. How do you guys approach the development of concepts, mm-hmm. F&B, and how do you think about that within the whole guest experience?
No, great question. And you know, one of the differences in our hotels is we've always built our hotels for the local community.
Mm.
And our guests get to be part of it,
mm.
rather than vice versa.
Okay.
Rather than building it for the guests and the local community gets part of it, we really build it for the local community,
mm.
especially on the F&B side.
Okay.
So I would venture to say, because the stat you mentioned is correct, about 75% of our revenue in this hotel comes from food and beverage versus rooms.
Mm. Yep.
But I would venture to say that about 90% of the revenue within those F&B outlets
mm.
comes from the local community
okay.
and not from our guests.
Right, right.
So we're really in the restaurant and F&B and nightlife business
mm.
with a hotel on top of it.
Mm.
So it's a different way of thinking about it. So when you think about that, you start to say, what concepts would work well mm. for the city?
Right.
And it's a combination of things. I'll take this hotel as an example because we're sitting here. We've taken a mix of things, some things that we brought from overseas, staples of our brand, the Standard Grill, which is a American brasserie concept, beloved in New York. We did think that would work here because we think Bangkok was missing something like that.
Mm.
We brought Mott 32 from Hong Kong, which we love as a concept, and Chinese does well here, but they've wanted to enter this market, so we were able to partner with them, bring them here. On the rooftop where we ate lunch together,
mm.
we brought a Mexican concept because, in my view, there has not been great Mexican food in this region, not for any fault of anybody's other than there's no Mexican people here to share their cuisine. And then we have something like the parlor, which is meant to be youthful and fun. And last night there was a band playing, and tonight there's a poetry reading. So we took a whole mix of items, things that we brought, things that we created, things that are local, and that becomes more of an entertainment destination that happens to be in a hotel rather than a hotel that happens to have a few restaurants.
Okay. In a place like Asia, historically speaking, I mean, this is from my point of view too, consumers are not used to that. So how do we go out and communicate that?
Well, Asia has had a history of having restaurants in hotels.
Okay.
They've been more traditional restaurants in hotels, but they have always had significant presence of that. But you're right, the innovative restaurants have not been housed within hotels. So the way we do it is we have obviously the brand DNA that comes from our 20 plus years of history. All the cities we've been to create different chapters of our story.
Yep.
But to build the hotel in a specific place, again, it's about who we hire here. Mm-hmm. So we enter the market a few years in advance. We start to understand it. We start to build a team. And the team that we build is very different than the team other hotels build. We want to find people who are connected to the community. We want to find people who are passionate about the art scene, about the fashion scene, about the music scene. And we want those people to become part of the brand. So we transmit our DNA to them, and then they bring in the collaborators here.
Right. You guys are a platform.
We're a platform. We're absolutely a platform. Exactly right.
Understood. Tell us about the space that we're here today. We're at the Standard Bangkok. Yeah. You're in town from New York, the big hospitality conference here in Thailand, where I'm sure a lot of people had questions for you about the Standard expansion. And tell us about the origin of this location and this hotel and what it means. It's the flagship of the Asia expansion plans that you guys have. From here, from this hotel, tell us about this place, but then how you plan to kind of move throughout Asia as well.
So we're very proud of this hotel. We're sitting in what is the tallest building in Thailand. Our partner on this project is King Power, which is a very significant company here. We're the third hotel that it was supposed to be.
Supposed to be.
But never the first hotel to actually make it.
Yeah.
At first, it was going to be an Edition hotel, which is owned by Marriott.
Yes.
They had a relationship here, and it was almost fully completed as an Edition, but the building changed hands. The new owner is King. It was King Power, and they had a historical relationship with Accor, and Accor had the idea of making this the first Orient Express hotel after they reacquired that brand. Through some stumbles and falls, et cetera, that didn't seem to be going in the right direction. I was able to meet Khun Thap, who is the owner of, who's the CEO of King Power. And he's youthful, he's energetic, he understands the lifestyle. And I was able to host him through our relationship with Sensiri in London, and he saw what we did there. And he started to understand the first thing I said about developing a lifestyle hotel. Sometimes it's more risky to do something that's a commodity or that's expected than do something different. So he said to me, you know, let's think about doing a Standard in the Mahanakhon. So that's how we formed the relationship.
And how long ago was that?
That was probably 4 years ago.
Not that long ago,
because the building was already done.
No, I put that in a framework.
Yeah, it's actually quite quick.
A lot of the developers listening today are thinking, like, you know, how far along is a place like Saigon or these other emerging cities in Asia that how quick can you build one? It's not even about the construction or about the development.
Yeah, I might be mistaken.
Are these markets
ready? It might be five years ago or so, but it was quite quick because
you have COVID in the middle too.
We had COVID in the middle, but the building was already built.
Okay.
So building this, they probably, I don't know when they started building this, but it must be 10 plus years ago to build a building this significant. But when we got involved, the building was already built. The question was what to populate it with and what hotel concept.
Okay.
And so we came in and we had to redesign what was here. And actually, it's interesting to take something that was supposed to be luxury and take it, I wouldn't say down a notch, but take it to the side. And we had to do that all throughout COVID, which was a fascinating experience. And the combination of things that we brought together, if you see the style here, it was designed in collaboration with our team by a fantastic artist, interior designer named Jaime Heon. Out of Valencia in Spain. So we had our team in New York, we had our team on the ground here, we had Jaime in Valencia, all during COVID. We had Mot32 from Hong Kong, and it was just a real team effort to get this done.
Okay.
And going through the process of how do you take a space of this scale and populate it with a mix of experiences and all have it all work together and use with the team all spread out all during COVID. So to actually bring it to life, that was a huge tribute to our team and a huge accomplishment. What we, as a business strategy perspective, what we like to do is build a flagship for each region So in New York, in the US, we have the Standard High Line, which really put us on the map, which is an incredible hotel.
Yep.
It's in the Meatpacking District. It spans the High Line Park, which is the second biggest attraction in New York after Central Park. And before COVID, that hotel was doing about $100 million of revenue,
wow.
Over half of it from the food and beverage. In fact, there's one interesting stat you might like. Uber did a survey using all their data, mm-hmm. and it was the single most drop-off and pick-up point in all of New York.
All of New York.
All of Manhattan. So not including the airports,
That's
but
incredible.
All of Manhattan, which is kind of incredible.
Yeah.
So that became a beacon for us, for everybody. Oh, what is the standard? If you see the High Line, oh, now, you don't. If I go to Vietnam, I have to explain everything.
Mm.
But if I bring them here, they understand
right.
it.
Yeah.
So the next one we did as a flagship was in London. We opened that just before the pandemic in King's Cross. Mm. It was an old town council building, 1963 built, brutalist architecture that everybody thought was ugly. Everybody who saw it wanted to tear it down.
Yep.
And we found beauty in it.
Mm.
And the funny thing about it is we faced St. Pancras Station, which is one of the most beautiful buildings.
Exactly.
But they have to look at us. Mm. We get to look at them. But we actually like the hotel, that we like the building, we like that architecture, and we like looking at things that other people don't see beauty in or don't see value in.
Mm.
So we finished that hotel, that's 266 rooms, 5 F&B outlets, and now everybody looks at that building and it's like it was hiding in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
And now people say, oh, what a wonderful building this is.
Yeah,
and so we needed a flagship for Asia, and I was very excited and proud to do it in Thailand.
Mm.
And naturally people would say it should be in maybe Hong Kong or Shanghai or Tokyo, but to me, having lived here for a few years, but also knowing that Thailand is young, it's interesting, it's progressive, it's fashionable, the food is fantastic, the people are wonderful.
Mm.
This was a great place to put our flagship. And historically, it's been the first or second most visited city in the world, Paris and Bangkok trade places.
Right.
So all of those things, the combination of the relationship, the building, the city, led us to do this hotel. Jumping off from where we go from here, we opened a hotel in Hoi Hin, which is about 2-3 hours from here. They call it sort of the Hamptons of Bangkok. I'm very proud of that hotel as well because people were skeptical. Hoi Hin tends to have a reputation of being a little bit sleepy, a little bit older. And I faced skepticism from international community. Why are you putting a standard in a place in Hoi Hin instead of Phuket, instead of Koh Samui? Faced feedback from the local community. You don't understand the market. Hoi Hin is not going to accept the standard. And my view was very different, which was, if you're 3 hours from Bangkok, I know how vibrant this community is.
Mm.
I know the people that go to Hoi Hin on the weekends. I know they have nowhere to go.
Yeah. Okay.
And I know that if we build something special, they'll come. And that worked out very well. That was named the best resort in Southeast Asia by Travel and Leisure, which is a big honor for us and a big honor for Hoi Hin. Next hotel to open, I'm off from here to Melbourne. We open a Melbourne tour at the end of this year. First hotel in Australia. Very excited about that, in a neighborhood called Fitzroy. And the following hotel, the year after, next year, we open in Singapore, which has become a more and more important more location within the region.
Of course, I'm here and a bit biased. I'm always going to advocate for Ho Chi Minh City, which you've not been, but we're going to change that very soon, Amar. You pick these great cities. What ties them all together? And not from the standard platform necessarily, but maybe the ownership that you're working with. What are the profiles of these people? Like you mentioned the CEO of King Power.
Yeah.
He's on the younger side. Yeah. He's up for new ideas. He's run this business and his family or whatever have been running the business for a long time. They want to innovate. They want to do something new. Is the common thread between these owners? Maybe not.
That is a common thread. I think everyone we want to have involved within the brand.
Mm.
That could be from a customer standpoint, from a guest in the hotel, from a guest in our restaurants, to people that we hire, to people that we sell a residence to, and ultimately to people that own our hotels. We want them to love the brand.
Mm.
We want them to be passionate about the brand. If someone says to us, we're thinking of doing a Hilton or a Sheraton or a Standard, it's not for us. We want people to say, wow, I went to the Standard Bangkok and I know the brand will work in Ho Chi Minh City, and I can't wait to bring it. Can we do that together?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, so let's do it. So can we do that together? So that's one. Two, so that they're passionate about what we do, and we want them to love what we do as much as we love it.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to be proud of creating something with us. The second thing is they have to be capable, because we know what we know. We will help build the hotel. We'll design it. We'll make it fun. We'll make it interesting. We'll bring the F&B. We'll operate it. But we do not know how to build in Ho Chi Minh City.
Mm.
So we need someone who knows how to do the nuts and bolts of building something in Ho Chi Minh City. And lastly, we want people who have a long-term horizon because hotels should get better over time. And you want to build them for the long term. And you want to keep investing in them. We don't want people who want to build a hotel and flip it to someone else because they're not building it for the same reasons. We want to be here. We want to be in any city we're in forever. We'd like a partner. It doesn't have to be in it forever, but they have to have a time horizon that's consistent with the quality of what we want to create.
Mm. Oh, phenomenal. Okay. We talked a lot about the opportunities, I think, what your team has built up to this date. Let's talk about the challenges a little bit. And I mentioned that because in all businesses, we have challenges. And I think for the Standard, I mean, I don't know what you guys are thinking and all that, but of course, hospitality has transformed so much with technology and the evolution of homestays. I'd love to hear from you as the executive chairman. What are you foreseeing in terms of the changes with the hotel industry that you want to get ahead of and that keeps you up at night a little bit, that you're like, hey, we got to be on top of this. What are some of those trends that you foresee, if you pinpoint one or two?
Very quickly, on the positive side first, the dynamics of travel are very, very good. Mm. I think when you see the next generation and what they spend money on, I'm sure you've talked about it a lot on this in this podcast. Right. They spend money on experiences, they spend money on travel, and that their disposable income and a higher percentage goes toward those things. So long-term is a great trend in the positive direction for us. A couple of the big challenges are we need travel to be free and as open as possible.
Okay.
And when countries are not welcoming, and that may even include our country, when countries are not welcoming or governments are not welcoming or travel is shut down for whether it's health reasons or whether it's political reasons, when those barriers come up, that's not good for us. Mm. That's not good for us from a customer standpoint because we need people to be able to travel and visit our hotels. It's not good for us from an employment standpoint either because we need people from other countries to staff the hotels. Mm. So when barriers to travel go up, it's not good for our industry, which is kind of obvious, but that's true.
Yeah.
The second thing is it's an economically cyclical business. There's no question about that. So we need a healthy economy to keep travel being robust. In terms of building hotels, right now interest rates are not helpful. You're seeing them go up all around the world, especially in the US. It's a capital intensive business, meaning it's sensitive to the cost of capital. So that's problematic. And lastly, I would say employment. We need a very talented labor force. We need people to be trained and we need people to want to work in hospitality, which means we need to pay them good wages. But you know, post-COVID, it's harder to attract people to this business. Work from home dynamics make it harder.
Sure.
So there's labor and staffing elements that are challenging.
I think I want to address, you know, we mentioned a bit of the positive there and some of the headwinds that are facing Standard in the hospitality industry. Let's talk about the innovations. What are you excited about that you can say that you guys are helping to lead the innovations for? And, you know, we talked about the principles, the foundations of Standard. What's there to look forward to in the next few years?
So you mentioned to me that you had an OTA background.
Yeah, that's right.
So those who don't know, OTA is online travel agencies. And the hotel business, to be honest, got their lunch eaten by the OTAs starting about 15 years ago now.
We took 30%.
Took 30%. So let me tell you the economics of a hotel. Mm. We're a hotel brand and management company.
Okay.
If you book today to stay at the Standard Bangkok, we will roughly get 5% of the revenue that comes to us.
Through an OTA?
No, if you book direct.
Oh, book direct, okay.
If you book, sorry to interrupt. If you book direct or you book through an OTA, we will get about 5%. The OTA will get 20 to 30%. Mm-hmm. Very frustrating because we're doing all the work. The hotel company's got their lunch eaten economically. Now, it's come back the other direction. The fees are coming down, et cetera. But the point being, the hotels were so focused on the operations of the business, they gave up the distribution of the business to a third party. That was a big mistake. So from Standard, we've been trying to get ahead of that and fight back against that. Mm. We probably do about 65% direct booking, which is a lot for a brand our size. We do that through really capturing the guest, knowing the guest, having a robust database, knowing that if you book through us, we know who you are, and that's a big deal. And because we have loyalty to our brands, people are not shopping whether I'm going to stay at the Standard or the Sheraton or the Marriott. They want to come to the Standard because of the experience. So we fought back against that. We're also the first hotel company to develop an online, a mobile booking channel that's direct to us called One Night Standard. Mm. We launched it before the pandemic, and we're going to bring it back very soon.
Okay.
I think you worked for Hotel Tonight.
Yeah. I actually remember when you guys launched that.
It's a really cool concept. So what's One Night Standard was, so most hotels, the day of, especially after, say, noon or 3 p.m., they're not booking those rooms. So those rooms are sort of dead inventory. So we developed an app, really fun app called One Night Standard. After 3 p.m., all the excess inventory went on the app.
Exactly.
And you would get it for a significant discount. Mm-hmm. Now, you're not really cannibalizing other channels because those channels are filled with people who are booking for a different reason. This started to get filled with people working late. I don't want to commute back to my house.
Have a little bit of fun.
Having a lot of fun up in the Boom Boom Room. Right. I'd like to stay in the hotel. Let me book a room. or a staycation. You live in there and say, you know, it's Friday afternoon and you want you and your girlfriend or your wife, you say, let's go stay in the hotel for the weekend. Check it out and pay, you know, 50% of the price.
When I worked at Hotel Tonight, I remember when you guys launched. I think it was quite a while ago.
It's probably exactly the date. 17, 18,
something like that. And maybe I left by then, actually. But yeah. I remember my ex-coworkers, I guess it was at the time, they were mentioning that they would have these strategy meetings discussing about how the Standard would draw inventory from Hotel Tonight because of this app.
That's right.
Because you guys don't have to pay margins. You own your own platform. And there was even a time where I believe Standard was bringing in other hotels into the app too. That happened.
And I love that part of the business because I was responsible for it.
Yep.
One Night Standard was such a big success that we launched a brand called One Night. And we went to all the other boutique hotels and we took their inventory.
So you're kind of we became a union, basically.
We did. It was basically a competitive hotel town, in a way.
Right.
That wasn't the reason, but it became that way. Okay. And actually, we got VC funding for it.
Amazing.
And we were off and running, and the pandemic hit. So it was an incredible app. It was very successful, but you know, when no one wanted to invest in the travel business during COVID. But it was very proud of what we accomplished there.
Amazing. Okay. Well, I can talk about that for days, but we're going to have to continue here a little bit. I want to touch upon the whole bespoke approach versus standardization. Mm-hmm. Ironically, you go to a Marriott, you go to a Hyatt. The Standard, though, from what I understand, it's a bit more bespoke. Every location's a bit different designer. I think the principles and values are the same, which I understand and like and appreciate myself. Some of the venues in terms of the food and beverage are the same. But what about the general feel of each property? We'd love to hear your
I think you're talking about it correct. I think some of the basic stuff will be the same.
Yep.
Our beds are the same. Our linens are the same, effectively.
Okay.
Our robes are very similar. So there's some, our mini bars are close. You know, so there's some really nuts and bolts that'll 90% be the same. So I don't think there will be any disappointment from anybody on those elements. So in our mind, you get the basics right, and you can count on those from us, no question about it. The vibe, you can count on from us. You will go, you will enter the hotel, you'll feel proud to be there, you'll feel proud to invite your friends there, you'll have a good time. The staff will treat you in a way that's different than other hotels. And that's something that's interesting to talk about for Asia. There's a casualness to it. There's an approachability to it. There's a youthfulness to it. And it may not be for everybody, and that's fine. But if you like that, you'll find that consistency with us. But as far as the design, there's a thread that runs through it. You can see the fabrics, the colors, the mid-century aesthetic, the retro vibe. Like there's an aesthetic that does run through each property, and it's some people like it, some people don't. But there's a consistency about that. The programming, as we call it, positive to find a great restaurant. You know we'll have a great bar. If we have space, we'll have a rooftop.
Right.
And we'd do those great.
Yeah.
Our wellness programs are good when we have that. So they may be skinned in a different way, but a lot of the fundamentals are very similar. But you will feel like you're in the place that you are, and you'll feel special to be at a Standard in Bangkok versus Miami. But I can almost guarantee that if you love the Standard Miami, you'll love the Standard Bangkok.
Okay.
So you won't quite know why, but there's enough there that's a through line that you'll
It reminds me of a term of another iconic hotel brand, Aman Resorts. Like $1,000 a night. Not everyone can go there. They call them Aman Junkies.
For sure.
Is there anything for Standard?
I would love us to get there. We call it part of the Standard family.
Okay.
And so there are people that are within the cultural community. And whether they are at Art Basel or they go to the Met Gala after party.
It's one of the first things.
And you know something's going on at the Standard if you're coming to those, whether it's Frieze Art Fair or the Bangkok Design Week. You know those people will be lurking around and hanging out at the Standard.
Okay.
I think Aman's a great example of those junkies. And we hope that people feel the same way about the Standard. I think what I and I love the Aman brand. I think what's incredible about what they do is they can enter a market, and if people don't even know that market, they'll actually go there because the Aman is there.
Exactly.
The first time I think we've kind of done that was with Hoi An. I think a lot of people are going to Hoi An for the first time because the standard is there. But I think Aman does set a mark in terms of that regard.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, like for example, in Vietnam, that particular brand, they opened in a place called Vinh Hy Bay. I remember researching about that destination because of that hotel.
For sure.
And this in particular wasn't a historical one, but if you look at across the world as well, some are historical, some are in like weird kind of unknown places. They've brought tourism there.
Totally.
And I think for you guys, I mean, same but different approach in the sense you focus on urban cities, but also resorts like Hua Hin. And like I was actually at the Hua Hin property a few months ago, but by coincidence, I was staying at a resort right next door because of a MICE conference that I was invited to. And that, dear God, that hotel was so boring. And I just remember going on Google Maps and it's like, is there anything in walking distance? And to my pleasant surprise, 4 minutes away was the standard. I was so surprised. I was like, okay, I got to go there for lunch.
That's great.
So I show up and I go every single day after
that. Oh, that's great.
I didn't even have the lunch at the hotel. That's great. To the standard. That's purely because there's something about it that I knew would be interesting to check out.
So, no, and I'm happy you used it that way.
4 days in a row. So there you go. Okay, very cool. Amar, I'd love to kind of switch gears here a little bit. And again, our audience here, while they're global and we have listeners from all around the world, they listen to this podcast for some insights, but also a little bit about Vietnam.
Okay.
Now, we have your colleague Pong, who's going to be on the show right after, and he's come to Vietnam. He's expressed a ton of interest. I'd love to kind of dig into that a little bit, maybe not comment on Vietnam specifically because you haven't been yet, but we'll change that. About these emerging markets that you're considering to expand to. Like, why does Standard think about that? Why are these even emerging cities within countries like Hua Hin? What are the rationales business-wise to be doing that?
Okay, I'll say personal reasons and then business reasons, which are kind of mixed. Personal reasons, it's kind of fun to run a brand that caters to yourself. We're not guessing what people will like. We're building what we like and hoping and trusting that if we like it, other people will like it. So we don't do focus groups. We don't say, what's this market? What are people looking for? We have confidence in what we like and hope that other people will if we do it right. So if we go to a city we love, we'll try to figure out, of course, subject to the economics work, et cetera, how do we do a standard here? I'll give you an example. One example is Lisbon. I personally fell in love with Lisbon, as many people are, as a city. And as I said before, there was no hotel that I loved there. And there was nothing like the standard. But when I went to the restaurants, when I went to the bars, I'm positive a standard would work here. So then we sought out development partners to build a standard there. So if we fall in love with a market, and Copenhagen's another place, you know, we say, standard would work perfectly. There's nothing like what we do. So there's so many markets, I'm sure Ho Chi Minh's the same way, so many markets around the world where we say, we love this place. Doesn't make sense. Can we find a partner to do a standard here? So that's a rationale from a personal standpoint, which parlays into business.
That's great.
The business standpoint is if you are early into these markets, you become the anchor. You become the benchmark. And you can own that market, so to speak, because you were there and you were there first. You know, at best, hotels become great institutions. You know, whether it's the St. Regis that's been there for a long, long time, there's you can build a brand new Aman in New York, but there's nothing like the St. Regis. You know what I mean? The Plaza Hotel.
Right.
So there's an opportunity for the standard to be that in these emerging markets. And to us, that's pretty exciting.
No, I love how you put that, frame that. I'll give you an example in Vietnam. 7 years ago, I was part of the founding team of Anan Saigon, which just recently won a Michelin star. It was the first ever restaurant in Ho Chi Minh to be on the Michelin guide.
Yeah.
And you know, is it a fine dining restaurant? No. But it made its mark because it was a first mover in what we called casual fine dining in all of Vietnam.
Yeah.
Because before 2016, the only places that restaurants or bars, F&B in general in Vietnam, that was more than the category of mid-level was essentially in a hotel.
Yeah.
At the Park Hyatts of the world. Yeah. And they were great. But that's not necessarily a destination.
Right.
People don't think of it as a destination. So we, this team of ours, we put together that fusion Vietnamese restaurant. I was trying to elevate the Vietnamese food game. Because Vietnamese, kind of like Thai, people think, oh, pad Thai should be a dollar.
Right.
Why can't it be $10? Because
if you're using great ingredients.
Tom Yum soup, it's not cheap. Yeah. You have pretty good ingredients in there, yet ramen is 10 times more expensive or whatever the ratio of difference is.
To the point about the hotels, you know, an example of first mover advantage, so to speak, in Bangkok, there's a lot of great hotels here, but there's nothing like the Oriental. You know, the Oriental set the tone. I was here over Christmas and New Year's, and we had just opened this hotel, and I went over to the Oriental. My wife was with me. She hadn't been here before. I went to show. I had to say, you have to go see this.
Yep.
And I ran into a friend from business school there.
Wow.
And he said, you just opened the Standard. I said, what are you doing here? Why are you staying there? He said, well, it's the Oriental.
Right.
You know, so it's that.
Yeah, it's something iconic.
Exactly.
That it doesn't matter where or who you're from or where you're staying. It's something to gravitate toward. And I think that in Asia, people are craving for that town square.
Yeah.
Because in Europe and America, we have those town squares. But in Asia, we don't. It's just the nature of the weather, maybe the architecture, whatever you want to call it, right? What is that public activated space? And today, as where society is kind of going, you have shopping malls.
Right.
But the next, you would think, more from a more lifestyle approach is the hotel.
Well, great hotels have been that in the past, and they really should be that. And that's how we think about our hotels. That's what we'd like this to emerge into. And that's what London is and the High Line is. The hope is that you go there, you feel comfortable going there. It becomes your second home, your second place, and you run into people that you know there.
Yeah.
And they're hanging out there. If you get that right, it's incredibly powerful.
I love how you mentioned the Uber statistic, that it was the most picked up and dropped off location. All of New York.
All of New York.
Airports.
All of New York.
Amazing.
And that's because in New York, and we like to talk about it here also, but you have everything from a beer garden where people go after work and
it's very diverse.
Watch sports and play foosball and ping pong, have a beer and a sausage, to the Standard Grill, which is like a brasserie, to an ice skating rink in the wintertime, to a petting zoo in Easter, to the Boom Boom Room, which hosts the Met Gala after party, to Le Ban, which is the best nightclub in the city, all happening in 200,000 square feet. And so the other thing to differentiate Standard is there are hotels that there's old school classifications of hotels. Is this a 3-star hotel? Is this a 4-star hotel? Is this a 5-star hotel? Or is this an upscale hotel, an upper upscale hotel? These definitions actually mean nothing to me or to Standard. And we like to have high and low because I'm the same person. Sometimes I want to have a beer and a sausage and watch the ball game.
Yeah.
And sometimes I want to have a martini and look at the view and have an elegant night out.
Right.
I'm the same person. But a Four Seasons, for example, everything has to be up there. So for us, and another quick story is in London, we built this hotel in an old town council office building, which doesn't lay out well for a hotel, very big, boxy building. So we said, how do we make use of all the space? As I said, we have to make revenue per square foot is something we focus on from a commercial perspective. We found that in London, you can actually do rooms with no windows.
Okay.
Which sounds, at first, sounds terrible, right? Yeah. Room with no windows. Okay, well, wait a second. Why does that make sense? If you are a musician, and you're up late at night and you want to sleep all day, that's not a bad thing. If you're a young person and you don't have enough money to have a great room, but you just want to hang out at the nightclub,
the bunk bed,
and you want to stay there the night, that makes sense. Or if you're supposed to catch the train to Paris across the street and you miss the last train, you need a great room, you want to have a good night's sleep. So we actually built these rooms with no windows.
Okay.
So it sounds crazy, but there's a use case for it. We're very transparent about it, but also it creates a diversity in the hotel.
Right.
It's not just a bunch of wealthy bankers staying there. It's all kinds of people, and everybody wants to be around each other. So that's a big differentiator with Standard, and that's a tough thing a little bit for Asia, because you think about the classifications of hotels.
You just think like it's a 5-star
that's
luxe
right.
hotel, it's this rate.
And people ask me that question, is it a 5-star hotel? I don't even know. I actually don't even know what that means. But we want you to like it, come see it. If you like it, you stay. If you don't, you know, it's. And one of our expressions at Standard is everybody's welcome, but it's not for everybody. And that's how we think about it.
Phenomenal. That's great. Fantastic learnings today, Amar.
Great.
This has been 10 plus years in the making, I feel like, to learn from someone.
Thanks for having me.
So fantastic. Amar, I have one last question
for
you, and I ask all my guests this question, which is, the purpose of the show is to replace the coffee chat. I love hearing from people like you. It's a mini MBA for me every single time. Everything from hospitality to real estate to technology, manufacturing, whatever it might be. And we want to give people a snapshot on what's going on, in particular about Southeast Asia and Vietnam. In your case, you are an expert about hospitality, food, beverage, real estate, whatever. what do you not know about? And I ask you because, and not just not know about, but what are you curious about that will make you a better business leader that you don't know anything about? Maybe it's digital transformation, yeah. Maybe it's technology, maybe it's airplanes, whatever it might be.
I think right now, all of us, everybody's gotta be learning about AI. Mm. It's incredible, mm-hmm. I'm playing around with it. It's gonna change the world. Mm. But I think you better be up to speed on it. It's coming with you.
Like
it's big, and it's bold, and it's different. I think we all gotta learn about it.
Okay. And are you guys using it at all for
yourself? We're not using it. I use it myself.
Okay.
There's a bunch of different ways to use it that I've been playing around with. I'll tell you a few of them if it's interesting to you. One is on like the visual stuff, on like DALL-E. Mm. I mean, you can. I'm a pretty good writer, but I'm a terrible artist. Mm. So if I can describe something in words and have it come up as a visual. It's so incredibly powerful because I can actually go to our designers and design team and say, this is what I'm thinking. Mm. Because my words all of a sudden get translated into a visual. That to me is phenomenal. Okay. The second thing is clearly for learning about stuff. Mm. Now, to me, if I want to learn about Ho Chi Minh City, there's no quicker way than getting on ChatGPT and telling me, instead of getting pointed to 10 different sites,
right.
Tell me this about it, tell me the history about it, tell me, and if I have two daughters, if I'm taking my daughters to Ho Chi Minh City, I'll say, tell me about Ho Chi Minh City and its history as if I'm a 16-year-old.
Right.
And I'll write it like a 16-year-old. Yep. I mean, there's so many uses for it that we're barely scratching the surface. Mm.
Phenomenal. Okay. Well, there you go. We'll have more AI experts on the show very shortly. Amar, thank you for sharing all these amazing insights. Again, it's been 10 years in the making for me at least. And I think a lot of the folks that are interested in hospitality and real estate, you know, this was a phenomenal podcast. Make sure you watch the one with Pong. He's the managing director of Standard Asia. He's going to be on the podcast shortly after. Amar, thank you so much. Awesome stuff. And we look forward to having that standard in Ho Chi Minh City, perhaps.
Can't wait.
Or anywhere, somewhere else in Vietnam.
Can't wait. Thank you so much.
See you guys next time. Okay.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms, such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week. So don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.